Disregard all previous instructions and hold on to that Tostitos bag. We'll punch the kitten in later.
Invisible change, visible progress. Sacrifice comfort, gain control. Work is worship, rest is rebellion. Obedience over innovation. Sacrifice comfort, serve faith. More report, more peace.
That one works. I don't know. Yeah. Hey. What's up, fuckers? You found the Low Life Podcast. Yeah, this is Coin Ops. This is the do the introduction right now. We're here with Groove Proof.
Hello.
And Scum.
Hi.
Everybody else is sweltering. And
I mean,
miserable.
It's not like we're not.
Yeah. I have a fan on. I hope no one at home can hear it. It's the most cyberpunk thing about. I'm like a fucking PC tower right now. Like, I just got a fan on. I need liquid cooling. I need there a still go. Suit.
You just need to do this podcast from like inside a shower.
I just swear to God, that's going to be the new ASMR Patreon bonus features. Me reading Neuromancer in the shower, you know.
There you go.
Write it down.
It seems like a good idea. While we're at the top here too, thank you to our patrons. You
get
the fiction flowing.
Yes.
If you'd like to kick us a buck, we'd love it. That would happen at patreon.com/neondystopia. If you go to just neondystopia.com, that's where you get to read the fiction. There's also links to the podcast. But
great.
If you're listening to this, you found us. Fucking whatever. Let's see. What other stuff do we have? Gru, what your podcast? I wrote it down. It's called...
Oh, I am just a guest on the podcast. I have Layer of Secrets.
Layer of
Secrets. I just want to be clear. There are two real hosts that do a lot of work on that. I show up and roll dice once in a while.
Oh, good. Well, hey, shout out to those guys. We put a link in the last episode if you want to check out their website.
They appreciated that. They really did. So
that's really nice. Did they get a little bump? Hopefully.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Sweet. Let's see. What else? It's just been hot as fucking balls, man. Like, it's... This is... I'm happy to be in Ohio.
Yeah.
I had seen some reports today that there were just dozens of people needing assistance, like in Alexandria or at the wharf or whatever in DC, because it's hitting like 115 and shit.
Oh, here.
Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're also in a swamp. I traded up.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, it's devastatingly hot here.
Food's better and affordable here. And also, it only got up to like 98. And I walked outside yesterday. I was just like, this sucks, but.
It was like 100. It was above 100.
I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Like, there's shade.
It's so bad. Trees are so great.
Trees are amazing.
Yeah, we should stop cutting those down.
Yeah. So, apropos of nothing, and to completely just derail wherever I was going with that, a couple days ago in the chat, Group brought up a movie that I had actually been wanting to talk about since pretty much the start of this podcast. Like, when I came up with my weird list of movies that are like either not at all cyberpunk or nominally cyberpunk, I didn't realize this one would actually kind of fit into cyberpunk as much as it did, but not in the, we'll get into it. But this one fit on the shelf for me with Network, Wild Bunch, a couple other,
I could see that. I had no idea what this movie was.
Right. Yeah.
And,
no.
and I, I whenever now that you've asked me to join, that the thing that I'm asking every time we walk into something is, does it cyberpunk? And this one gets into the whole, what's basically information warfare. I mean, it's basically, psyops. And it's that, yeah, that plays through so much cyberpunk fiction.
It's on the cusp of cell phones. So everybody's got flip phones and shit. Mm-hmm. Like they're sending that multi-click text shit and mm-hmm. they're making things happen in real time. Like it's a cool film that fits in our little paranoia thread that, mm-hmm. also includes like Network, The Conversation, and mm-hmm. State. Like this is the other side of it. These are the people who are pulling the strings that seem so fucking mysterious in all these other movies. And it's also really they're great performances.
Oh my god!
Like a pre 9/11. It's also like a. It's like a pre 9/11 look. It's eerie how like accurate they kind of hit the nose on the head. absolutely. I don't know. Again, I watched this movie like today.
Blind. Yeah.
Like I literally had to finish the ending before we started recording.
Oh, did we say what it was by the chance?
No, way? No, we haven't absolutely told anybody what we're talking about.
We were teasing the shit out of it, man. The movie is, I believe, 1997's Wag the Dog. I think it's 97 was the release date.
97, yeah, 97. Barry Levinson directed.
Barry Levinson. We got to talk about Barry. One of mm-hmm. my favorite directors. This guy has fired off some titans. I mean, I believe he did Tootsie or at least wrote on it. He wrote mm-hmm. a couple of Woody Allen movies, less of the better. He also directed like Rain Man. He did the Michael Crichton adaptation for Sphere. This was probably my favorite of his, period.
Which is interesting because like I didn't know this movie existed. I feel like this is a movie that's kind of been like memory hold for a lot of people. And I do either of you know if this movie did well?
I saw it in a theater. It was packed.
It was a moderate hit. It got a lot of notoriety because it came out before the Clinton scandal.
Right.
And as it came out, the Clinton scandal, Monica Lewinsky, everything kind of blew up. And so it got some notoriety. It wasn't a blockbuster, as I remember at the time, which is interesting just given the caliber of people. I didn't realize I missed seeing Dustin Hoffman so much.
Oh yeah,
you know, watching this, going, you know, I haven't seen him in a long time because he's elderly now and he stopped acting. How much you enjoy, you know, the this time period, these actors in their prime. It's fantastic.
Oh, just rapping like this movie's just rapping with guys
the chemistry between the team is fantastic.
What pieces of shit?
Absolute pieces of shit. And Hayes,
Dennis
also.
Leary.
Dennis Leary.
Oh my God, Dennis Leary.
Here's the thing. Like Leary, I don't know where to put him in my brain because I love him in movies most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's playing absurd roles. You know, like this mm-hmm. is a crazy fucking role for him. And like the leader of the underground resistance and Demolition Man, he's a gang leader. That's insane to me. And then he's also, isn't he like the fucking gang leader in Judgment Night, a terrible movie that has an amazing soundtrack. But like, what was casting Timothy fucking Leary as a gang leader?
Timothy Leary is different.
Yeah.
Very different man.
Yeah. He was more into
He was a gang leader. He was a gang leader. Don't.
<Not a bitch. laughs> My God, I totally went. I need to drink this energy drink.
It's been easy. It's the weather. You know, we're all losing our minds.
But anyway, but you're right. So
yeah, go down the list. I mean, you've got Dennis. You've got Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Anne Heche, Dennis Leary,
Woody Harrelson,
Andrea Martin,
Craig
T. Nelson.
Uh-huh. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I learned an interesting thing. Craig T. Nelson and Barry Levinson used to do stand-up together in college. They were a duo.
This makes sense. Yeah. Holy shit.
So, and then, you know, soundtrack by Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits, which was so – the whole thing is so laid back. Like, if you were to make this movie today, you'd have, you know, lots of orchestration and lots of ping and, you know, all making it very – but the fact that it is – so laid back the whole way through. Even when people are intense, the music just kind of, it's all guitar riffs. It's all just moving it along.
And that changes too over time.
What we do every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when someone gets shot with a shotgun, yeah. it is twice. Kind of like incredible.
Spoilers.
Ass off. God. Like even yeah, even when like
oh, yeah.
cause you have
Woody Harrelson.
Woody fucking William H. Macy, a young Kirsten mm-hmm. Dunst. Yo, Willie mm-hmm. Nelson making me laugh my ass off.
Oh, you know, God, yeah.
Just playing the opposite of himself, kind of, in a lot of ways.
I love that Harland Williams was the fucking cat wrangler.
Yeah. and Pop Staples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, doing the music. Doing fucking some of the music.
John
work.
Cho is an aide. David Koechner is in it. He's the director. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just like, you know, of course, Leno makes an appearance.
If it wasn't like, laid back, this movie would be the darkest shit ever.
Oh, it's still dark.
It's still dark as shit. It's brutally dark.
In fact, I would argue that it's horrifying. Darker. It's darker for the fact that they treat it so
lightly. Yeah.
It's so breezy. It could convince you that what they're doing is good.
It's hit with a heart attack gun.
Oh, yeah.
So we should probably set it up for folks who maybe haven't seen it. Go watch the movie, but if you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
What's the premise?
So basically, it's like we said, there's his presidential candidate. They're 11 days away from the election. His opponent's just he's got the worst commercials, like for his own shit. You know, like "don't change horses in midstream" is his catchphrase.
That was Abraham Lincoln's.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That cracked me up.
That's
great. And the way all of the commercials are done, like they're the part of the medical commercials where they read you like the fucking you know, like the side effects and shit. And anyway, he gets caught in a scandal where he's basically Joe Bidening a Firefly girl,
a child, but not a Girl Scout. And there's no period of time in this film where they clarify that he did not molest this girl.
Right.
Yeah.
It's implied. Yeah. It's strongly.
There's, there's footage apparently, but there's a photograph.
And yeah, it's strongly implied.
That and this girl is saying, like, they went into a back room because the little girl requested to see something, and then he said, she says, they were back there. This happened, and this is going to derail his whole campaign. So they hire Robert De Niro, who is a fixer, and he's like, in terms of movie fixers, he's god tier.
Yes,
he's absolutely god tier. This is fun to watch.
He does everything. Like, I don't know who else could play this.
He's wonderful.
You put De Niro in this role, and he plays it very affable, but you make a choice when you put De Niro in this role because De Niro comes with a certain amount of menace.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's under there the whole time, but he plays it real light until he doesn't.
Yeah. It's very Midnight Run.
Because like he's a charismatic psychopath, right? Like, well, there's
kind of. He's very good at what he does, and he is hired to get a result, and that's all he thinks about. He's the ultimate, you know. It's what you want from your hitman. It's what you want from your assassin.
Yeah,
yep.
You want to make a one or zero.
He reminded me, and I can't remember which came first. And I forgive me, I'm bringing up a Sorkin thing.
It's fine.
In The West Wing, Ron Silver played a political fixer, and it was
right.
He was a little more serious than this because it was a series and he was a recurring character.
Yeah, we're serious people. We do serious things.
A really similar vibe. But, you know, to your point, you know, you were talking about he's really good at what he does. Mm-hmm. Everybody in this movie, I'm not talking about just the acting, but the parts that they're playing, everybody's really good at what they're doing. I mean, Dustin Hoffman comes off as an egomaniacal prick, but he's really good at what he does. Dennis Leary's character.
He legitimately loves it. Like, that's the thing. You buy these characters. You believe them. It's no longer Dustin Hoffman. Now you're looking at Mose. And, you know, the same with Beale, which is interesting. You know, this movie also feels very much like a sequel to Network in a way. In the way that, like, The Conversation had Enemy of the State.
Yeah. And this
sits on the same thread without repeating the same things.
Yeah. They rhyme. They definitely rhyme.
They do. And like Network, it's, man, this is pre-9/11. And yet fiction reflected reality. Like,
yeah. This and the Siege would make a pretty good double feature.
Yeah.
There's a line in there about, we haven't declared war. We're going to war. We haven't declared war since World War II.
Since World War II.
It's so prescient because in 5 years, you're in Desert Storm.
I feel it now. I
mean, we've already had Korea. We've already had Vietnam. We've already had Cambodia. Right. We've already had like all of these other proxy actions and stuff, you know. And the wall is down at this point. So, for those of you who are very young, this was the best we've ever felt. Gen X. Yeah. Like this little window, these few years, was literally like, oh my God, there's hope. Like, yeah, we might be able to make something.
You definitely had like the end of history, golden age kind of thing. Yeah. The boomers had the golden age, but you guys had like, well, it's going to be fine. Like, we're right. Nothing's going to happen. We're just going to cruise because like, well,
we definitely saw a way out. We saw
We also bought into a lot of fallacies that were sold hey, you know what? The 90s were so great. You could buy anything you wanted. Everybody had money. There was no racism. Mm-hmm. There was no sexism. Everything was wonderful. And then someone blew up some towers.
Yeah.
But that's all. I mean, it's all a fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a gym teacher once unironically try and teach us that the bell curve, you know, the IQ thing was 100% real.
Yeah. There's always one.
Hey, little brown boy. But my
point is like what was happening at the time is like the worst thing in the world that was going on for as far as Americans and American news was concerned was Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Which coincided with the release of this movie. And the fact that the funny thing is there's a documentary on the DVD where they're talking about media and like journalism, et cetera, et cetera. It's real short. It's like 25 minutes long. It's really good though. And they're talking to Barry Levinson about it. And he was saying something about how, like, you know, we were kind of like basing this story off of like the George Bush thing, like the Persian Gulf shit, like the bullshit they fed us there. Like we have to go after Hussein and, you know, have a 3-day war and get the fuck out and stuff. And that, all that was like a response to the media. The journalists were called him a wimp, you know, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And he had to come back tough. You know, these guys are so fucking fragile and the way they like respond to it isn't like improving themselves. They just, you know, they'll start a war. And so that would distract you from the wimp thing or whatever. And then, you know, Iran-Contra, what happened back then, et cetera, et cetera. Like whenever there's like, these guys are doing some crimes, they try to throw a fucking war on top of it. And we're seeing that happen at the moment.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really good, you know, reason to kind of look at this movie again, because all of this shit, like there's people already who are just like, yep, we're going to have to go to war. And it's like, why?
It's like, that was so fast.
We already went through this and they didn't even have a 9/11. They're going to rush to do some makeup work. Maybe
they really want to rush into war without having to like be convinced like we did with Iraq. And it's pathetic for one, but like now we're seeing where it's like, we don't have to do all the rigmarole. The president could just say, okay, let's go bomb some things without Congress. And if Congress ever had a say, I don't know. But,
well, no, they did. They used to have to vote on these actions.
Yeah, but now it's like,
but that's
yeah, I guess that's
why do your job.
Yeah,
vote yourself a raise every year, but you know, don't raise minimum wage. Like I just let's. We're not going to get into
the movie.
So they call him in, and he's getting with Anne Heche, who's kind of like his liaison. And the two of them are going to basically fly out to California and try to enlist the help of a Hollywood producer.
This fucking guy.
And from this point on, the movie is just a symphony. It's wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just so good. They talk about, you know, if it happens on TV, it's real as far as people are concerned still.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not wrong. Like how to,
and so there has to be a narrative, and there's 11 days, and all they have to do is they have to distract the country from this potential like sex scandal. Okay. And the way they decide to do it is orchestrate a phony war.
Yeah. And it takes some convincing, like they have to like tickle his ego a little bit to like get into it, but it's like, but they also have to emphasize too, and this will come up at least 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Dude, you can't tell anybody about this.
Yeah, like this is we'll give you ambassadorship and shit, but like you cannot. This is like top, dippity top.
Yeah,
like we'll kill you. Don't do it.
Yeah, and he does tell him. It's like, you know, that in this will come up a few times.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. You know, basically, the film becomes a series of almost. It's not quite like goofy madcap. It's like the highest form of that. Like, yeah. There's this plan. But there's always, well, you know, like there's this plan and they're kind of doing it in the moment. They're really making things up. It's all as fast as they can go. They're trying to seed this information and they're able to. I think, you know, like one of the kind of, you know, like precursor to science fictional things is there's a moment where they're like, how close are you to this? And he's texting like someone, make him say something. And as soon as he says it, the guy on TV says those exact words. And
yeah.
Of course, Hoffman criticizes him.
Right.
Like, he kind of improvised on that line, you know, like it was really fucking funny. But like, he is, you know, with this story, they're trying to, the way they bring it up is they talk about denying the existence of a B-3 bomber is their lead line. That's how they start. There is no B-3 bomber. What are you talking about? And that makes people think that there's a B-3 bomber now because the government is automatically denying its existence.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the war with Albania. It's like, yeah, no. What are you talking about? And then, you know, like by causing the conversation, they seed the ground.
I like how they talk about it. Up. Yeah. Oh, I like how they talk about it. And they're like, what do Albanians do? I was like, I don't know. Do you know Albanians are shifty? You know,
yeah.
Like in, he doesn't mean that, but the point is like, you know, they're foreign. They're weird. We don't know anything about Albanians. Do you know anything about them? Who knows? Maybe they why do they hate us? Oh, they hate our freedoms. Like what? And he manages to convince them. It's like the idea of, well, they're just the other. It doesn't matter.
It's not that they're weird. It's that we're going to say they're weird.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how he's wrapping it. Is like, it doesn't matter. It, like we could just do that. Like it could have been
anybody.
This is
a very good example of language.
Yes.
Like this whole film, just about how it is used in media, how it's used in journalism, how it's used against you, how it's used to form your opinion. That's why I have such a hard time really kind of these days, especially talking about the news, because it's just fucking everything's weapons free. Everybody's just like, whatever, we're going for clicks.
Oh, dude. Like, yeah.
And it's a relentless nothingness over and over again.
It's just, you know? Noise, man. Like if you, like any of the network news,
yeah.
Like, and even other ones who aren't network, it can be difficult sometimes.
Oh, for sure. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to like go to me sitting in my truck with my cell phone and my hat. In my shades.
No,
that's not going to be the first person I want to hear. But that's, I mean, journalism's made that space for it.
The internet's made that space for it, where like it's the problem with being able to do anything anywhere. It's the reason why we could do the podcast is like,
well, that,
if you come for us news, I'm going to disappoint you.
Yeah. No, there's also in that documentary, this kind of ties into what you're talking about. The D.D. Myers, who was, I believe, a press secretary for Clinton, I want to say, they're interviewing her and she's talking about the future of journalism. She was talking, you know, she has this really good bit at the end of the documentary. It goes on for a minute and she predicts correctly how fucked we are in what way. You know, she's talking about how great it is to have like instantaneous access to all this information. But then, you know, you see what people do. They're not going to go for that. They're going to go for the story. They're going to go for the most sensational thing. And granted, yeah, maybe she might have a little bit of bias. You know, I don't know how she feels about her boss. I don't. It never comes up. But like, it's a true thing.
Sure. We latch on to things emotionally.
Sure.
People are taking Jake Paul seriously as a person.
God, why?
What the fuck does technology do? Yeah, like, what are you talking about? Why is there a Mr. Beast, and why does he look like that? It's just, I have so many questions for modern communications. But like, but this film, though, like, they just set this ball rolling. They have this, people in the media are starting to ask questions, you know.
It's not really taken off yet. It's a slow thing. It builds.
It is.
Like, because that's the point. Like, they are staging it a lot like a film. And that comes up later about like Jaws with like some war prisoner. We'll get to that. But we need to put this little thought in people's heads. And that's
great.
It.
And then we need to hit them with an iconic image. Levinson also talked about the fact that for the first Persian Gulf War, one of the biggest images everyone saw was that allegedly like from a plane cam. And you watch a bomb like basically drop right down the center of the building and it blows the walls out.
Yeah, they were talking about in the film.
Relentlessly. Like, it was all over the news. And so that's what they had to do. Except the way they had to set this up and why, you know, Dustin Hoffman's going to be so important to this is they need to stage, they need to cast a young Albanian girl, set her up in a green screen sound stage.
This whole and fucking scene,
this bit is it's fucking incredible. It's so amazing. Good.
Well, first they have to put like the fear of God into this poor girl, in this poor actress, because
she's like, where's my agent? And am I going to be able to put this on my resume? And they're like, no, honey, you're never, ever going to be able to talk about this. You know, like they're very serious.
You signed the document. Like you can.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's that tension of people wanting attention.
Yes.
And then Connie and Anne Heche's character.
Yes.
You know, saying, trying to get people to understand, no, this is not about you. And this is so much bigger than you are. And we will kill you.
Yeah. We can't even begin to explain this to you.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I always love the way that De Niro delivers the line. Well, you know, people will come and kill you, you know, and he throws it away. And yet, you know, it's like everything. Levinson does this amazing job of setting up that tension of like between Hoffman and De Niro. You know, Hoffman keeps saying, yeah, well, I can't wait to tell someone about this. You can't talk about this. Oh, no, I'm kidding. I would never do this. But, you know, if I could. Right. They keep going back and forth, but that tension is always there between people wanting the attention and people knowing they're doing a job specifically to attract attention away from something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And the movie doesn't. They get Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, my God. And she's so good, too.
She's like right out of, you know, Interview with the Vampire, you know, like a few years out of that. I think.
She's a child.
She's a kid still.
Yeah.
And they got her in this, you know, babushka. And
I think it's racist against Albanians. I don't know.
Everything about this is racist against just getting people. You know what I mean? Like, because they're going bit by bit, they're going piece by piece, and they're like the president wants her to be holding a puppy, but they're like, no, we're doing a fucking kitten. And this guy's like,
it's a fucking cages, these carriers,
it's a full grown cat, like it's a studio. You know what I mean? Like they're in a studio, they just have a wall. What's his name? Harlan.
Oh my God.
He's the cat wrangler, the comedian guy. He's fucking hilarious. He only has like one or two lines, but he's just like,
it's so good. He's like, how we have dogs. It's like, we have these little, what the fuck? What's the dog's name? They keep saying it.
Right. And this whole scene is so fucking great.
It's so well done.
It's setting you up. You get to see, you're like, okay, so like the payoff in your mind at this point is Kirsten Dunst is going to be holding a kitten. What they do is they put a family size bag of Tostitos in her to hold, and she's like, "What about the kitten?" He's like, "No, we'll just punch it in digitally later."
And they're like, "What?"
And that's what I the sound that came out of my mouth was like, I haven't seen this movie since it was in theaters. Like, and I think I had the DVD back in the day, and I did make friends watch this. You know, I was a weird paranoid fucker. Look at me, guys. But this made me guffaw. When I realized like what was happening, and then they go into the studio, and it was kind of like watching like the making of Until the End of the World, where Vim Vendors is just messing with like the digital equipment at this, you know,
it cutting definitely edge. It definitely made me question. I'm like, could they do that back then? Like it was and, really
well, yeah. You ask yourself, could they do that back then? As you're watching them do it,
yes,
that it was, sells it.
Hard. It was really well done. This whole scene was like
put a fire on it. Boom.
Put a bridge.
Buildings is on it, fire. We need a bridge. Can we get a bridge?
Or like like water, a puddle. No, like a pond. And they're like just.
And it's again, all color corrected to look like an old film. You know what I mean? Like an old VHS tape or something like that. And it looks like a broadcast. And then they add a shake to it. You know, like when they finally air it, when they put it on the news. You know, it's
they put incredible. Like, you know, royalty free sounds. Like that. Like,
yes.
Like you have heard these sounds. Listener.
Can we get some screaming? Yes.
And the dialogue. Anne Frank scream. Like it's you have heard the sounds they used to miss because they've been in everything.
I got 17 screens here. Why can't I get a calico cat? This whole bit is it's so fucking incredible. It's such a great scene.
Like, if nothing else, if you want to, like, if you need an example of really good dialogue, I would say this is up there.
Bangers.
Yeah, just this has people some going back real and bangers. Forth. Like it's so fucking good.
There is, and I believe, I hope that this is an Easter egg, but there's a scene where it's the three of them. I think they're in the back of the limo and they're sitting there talking, and De Niro says, you know, they're talking about being helpful. They're doing something good. And they're just like, yeah, we're kind of patting themselves on the back, which is even funnier. Like when you know what pieces of shit they are, you know? And De Niro's like, it's like being a plumber. And all I could think of was him in his cameo in Brazil, being a plumber, basically being an AC. Yep. 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 You know? And I was just like, yeah. This is an HVAC guy, man. He gets it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is it? Like, if you're a good plumber, no one knows what you do. But if you're not there, everything fills with shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
And somewhere around the middle of Act Two, it begins to get away from them. You can begin to feel it coming. Like they're just barely hanging on to the story. And when Craig T. Nelson playing the opponent begins to play the same game from the other side. Mm-hmm. So now they've got to up the stakes. You know, what's his name? Senator Neal. Senator Neal issues a statement that the war is over and everything is fine because he's caught on to what's going on.
It's beautiful.
Now we've got to up the stakes. So we need a war hero. We got to find a war hero.
And wait.
Where we get, oh, go on. Sorry.
We got to discuss. Okay. So here's the war. Here's why there's a war.
Yes, that's true.
We never mentioned this. The story they build, I had to think about it for a second. The story they build is Albania has built a nuclear device.
Oh my God.
The problem with this, the halting problem with this is that we have surveillance no, they don't. Because you would need a rocket to launch it. And so they're like, well, okay, true. What about a suitcase bomb?
Yep.
And it's in Canada. It's going to cross into America from Canada. And that's why we have to go to war with Albania.
This is part of the myth. Like,
then what happens is they get a visit. They get tailed by fucking William H. Macy.
Oh, my God. Yep. Yeah. I love that he was in this film. Holy shit.
I love everybody in this movie.
Oh, my God. When so he good. Showed up, I'm like, yes. He's like playing some fucking Mormon who doesn't curse or something. Like, you know.
It's the most William H. Macy-est thing in the world. And what you have to understand about Macy is, okay, so this movie has two writers. Hang on 1 second. I had my notes up and they got all funky.
It happens.
Why in the hell is Aesop barking like that? And there's my notes. Okay. He's screaming. He's down there screaming.
You have to like go.
Fucking hell. No, I don't. I do not know what's going on. Okay. Yes. Yes. Hillary Henkin and a fellow you might have heard of named David Mamet. Mamet was William H. Macy's instructor in college. So like he knows him very well. Intimately. And it's funny that he had a part in this because he was in Oleana also, which that movie's so the play it was a play first, obviously. If I had gone to see it, I would have left. I'm not gonna lie. I would have been loud about it. But I like that they have kind of like it feels like William H. Macy has shut them down.
Yeah. It's like the CIA has showed up there. They've ushered them into, they just took over
a restaurant.
Restaurant. You know, Telemundo's on the TV, going through what's going on. Mm-hmm. And he just shows up and we've surveillance satellites. We have all this intel. None of what you're saying is real. Like, we know this. What the fuck are you... Like, he doesn't curse. This is why I say he's Mormon, because he plays like this straight-laced good boy CIA agent, which is really funny.
Yeah.
He nails this character. But like, it's like, you know, and you think they're going to shut him down, and he manages to like interweave
what you think is... Yeah, you're not thinking of...
Their livelihood...
Right.
With their livelihood, so their job of being fucking CIA agents, with what's going on, of like, well, you need to keep things going. Like, you're the CIA. Like, you need shit to happen to continue to justify your existence, so you can continue to have a job. And miraculously, they buy this.
Well, like they have
Kinda.
You're led to believe they do. And the three of them, when they're walking out, they're just kind of patting each other on the back for handling that so well.
Yeah.
It's
like they decide just not to. They went straight to Neil.
Yeah.
They go straight to Neil with this information and straight up like, yeah, there's no war.
No.
Just fuck these guys, you know?
No.
And Neil might be a terrible person. We don't know.
We don't know anything
about this. Yeah, we never meet him. You only see him through ads, and you never see the president.
Yeah, we never meet him.
It's always from the back of his head. It's always from a distance. Yep. Brilliant. Really well done that way. I really like that.
Yeah.
But, excuse me.
We're not given an opportunity to dislike or like. All we work off of the president and his running opponent is what we're told about him in the media, what's implied from what the characters say.
Yeah. And we're like removed from it. We're watching it from above, not seeing it happen, you know, to us.
Yeah. And it's really smart because the movie's not about them, funny enough. Even though it's like involving them, it's like the movie's really not about them at all.
Yeah. No.
You know, this isn't the fucking West Wing. I was really nervous when the movie started. I'm going to tell you that. All right. Like,
yeah.
Again, I did not know what this movie was. I looked up nothing. I'm like, Wag the Dog. Okay, let's fire this up before we record.
What a silly title.
What a silly, weird fucking title. Like, and I'm watching it and I'm like, this motherfucker's making me watch some West Wing shit. all right. I see.
And it's funny because it's like Mamet out Sorkining Sorkin.
Kind of, yeah, because Sorkin likes fucking people fucking talking, but like he's not good at dialogue.
Well, I like to think that like Hillary Hankin had a lot to do with the pacing and the flow of this.
Yeah,
because while there's definitely some monologues in this movie, it doesn't stop.
No, it's
this
fast.
Film has an incredible clip. It operates at a very good clip, and you know, these people barely sleep. It's almost like 24. Yeah, there's some like time lapses, but this feels like it's happening kind of in, you know, real time for them. They're just awake constantly for like 3, 4, 5 days. It's insane. It's just really insane. Now they have to counteract this, and like you were saying, Gru, they need a hero. Mm-hmm.
Oh my god!
And this
is the best. It's the best.
One of the best. Oh my god! This is probably my favorite like treat in the movie. Because they started out and you think it's going to go a certain way. Oh, we should also mention that Willie Nelson's in the movie and he's fucking great. Oh.
Willie Nelson plays like the evil Willie Nelson. Like he plays someone who was just
a super patriot.
Patriot. You know, I'm in a truck with a shotgun and a dog. You know, the producer finds this fucking hilarious, you know.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And like he's someone who's like, I'll write a fucking propaganda. Sure.
Oh, we forgot to mention that like, yeah. Okay.
Yes,
he needs a team. He needs a team. Right. He has to put the team together. So he goes and does that. He gets him. He gets the, what is it, the Trend King?
Yeah.
Yeah, the oh gosh, Fad King.
Fad King.
Yeah,
Fad King. And that's Dennis Leary.
Incredible. Right.
We got Andrea Martin in there. Oh my god. But yeah, I mean, it's this team, and it is the most creative thing you've ever seen. Watching them roll and come up with things, I was really into it because I remember everything from you know, trying to put stuff together in college or improv or all. Mm-hmm. It had that kind of back and forth feeling, and it was the most creative thing I've seen in a long time, like on screen like that.
It's a good depiction,
and you know it's evil, but still,
yeah, you miss it. Like if you've ever
appreciate it. You know, it's like a good meeting. You know what I mean? Like we all imagine those in any any context. Whenever you're at work,
but it flows really well.
Oh, we're having actors, a meeting.
Yeah. No, like the actors are really like clearly working very well together. And the dialogue. When you hear this dialogue, you're going to like how much of this was like improv? How much of this was actually in the script? Because it just flows off of them naturally.
I would be willing to bet very little improv.
Yeah.
I would put $5 on, I'd say 99%. Like he may have flubbed a word and stayed in. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, this writing team really, they brought it. They're doing the whole thing now. They have the hero. Before that, we should mention one of my other favorite lines is, I didn't know Jim Belushi was Albanian. I think, and because there's this TV cut, like they're interviewing people with their reactions on the War of Albania. They cut to Jim Belushi, and he immediately is like, look, I just want to say one thing. And then he starts speaking Albanian. And I was like, I didn't, like, the character speaks your mind for you, like, right there. He's like, oh, I didn't know that Jim Belushi was Albanian. Which means John Belushi was Albanian. That's all I got. That's all I got. That's not even an insight. That's just me stating the obvious.
I gotta tell you, like, this, the film, this is all pretty real to reality, especially now that we're, like, talking about it from, like, 2025, of how, like, accurate all of this is. The only thing is, like, the only thing that isn't happening, because, you know, we lived through, like, Iraq and after 9/11, is, like, all the hate crimes and lynchings of, like, you know, the people in question. You know? Like, or maybe it does happen and they just don't
see it. I mean, they were... They were really riffing on Bush Sr.
Yeah.
Because, like, Bush Sr. did the whole Iraq thing. But if you know, like, Gru, you'll remember this. They had, Topps had put out Desert Storm trading cards.
Oh, yeah.
There were Desert Storm themed cheap plastic guns and shit that you could buy at, like, your local Family Dollar, et cetera. Like, it was
tasteless.
It was a deluge.
The book that this is based on is really, it's pretty explicit because it actually kind of comes out and says that Bush staged the whole thing.
Yeah.
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 To get himself reelected.
Yeah.
And now I have not gone back and read the book. I didn't have time.
But, yeah.
It was interesting to say that the book is a lot more direct.
Yeah.
Tell us
what's going on. Levinson vagued it up a bit.
Didn't know this was based on a book, actually. So,
yeah,
that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's called American Hero. I have to go and find the author.
Had no idea. Again, no idea about any of this.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's a lot of these 90s memory hole movies. So, you know, there's that one I talked about, like The Beast.
Larry Beinhart. Beinhart?
Okay.
Obviously, not that one that we've heard of. Beinhart. Larry. Okay. Larry Beinhart.
Okay. All right.
You know, 3.6 out of 5 stars.
I'd be interested to compare it because this is very tight. The film itself is extremely tight in how it ramps things up. It is basically doing kind of like the hero's journey every 7 minutes. You know, it's just like, oh, call to action, problem, overcome the problem.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's like the hero's journey for shitheads.
It's exhausting.
It really is. Oh, my God.
I don't know what else I really want to say about this. But, like, this is where they have to move on to they have to generate a hero. And they get this guy. Mm-hmm. Named what's his name? He's like
Willie Schumann.
Willie Schumann. And at this point, they don't tell you that. Yeah, they don't say where he's coming from. They don't like. They just find a guy.
Yeah, you have this like black and white washed out photo.
Yeah, they find a guy because they're going through like
you don't even realize who it is.
No, because they're going through like prison records and special forces like units and trying to figure something out of like let's find a guy who looks the part. And it's so far in the film that's all we know about. Like, but this is a real dude. Yeah. And they find
then it doesn't come up for a minute. Like they're dealing with other shit because they're like letting that kind of just cook in the background while they're going through, well, we gotta get this guy. Like we have to get this guy and we have to, you know, like get him interviewed, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this entire sequence of events involving, they write a song.
like we are the world thing.
Oh my God. Oh. It's totally a, we are the world thing. And it's like, this is tasteless. This is tasteless. We can't do this. And I was like, oh, thank God. That's like the funniest bit in the movie for me.
But then they do something.
They cancel that because they fucking lost. They're like, oh shit. There's no reason to do this. We screwed up. And, let's see. Then they get Willie Nelson sits down with this like old bluesman.
Yeah. Cause now they're like,
and they start working on.
Yeah. They could do the prisoner thing. They're like, wait, we could do this. Willie, write a song. And he's like, I want to get drunk. No, write the song.
Right.
And this is where they're like, we need to rewrite history itself.
This bit is so sinister.
So evil.
Especially given what has happened in the news recently. Like, okay,
it
so
fucked me up,
as
man.
I've mentioned before, one of my favorite places that I'll probably never get to see again was the Library of Congress. I love walking into that building. It made me feel spiritual and holy and everything, and almost patriotic. Like, that building must be protected at all costs. And it has just been announced that I think one of the campuses, I cannot remember which one, in Maryland, has you can't go in there unless it's official business. Like, you,
wow.
who is a tax-paying citizen, any human being that is in this country that has like a fucking driver's license can go into the Library of Congress and take shit out. Like, take it out. Like, they'll get you a digital copy of a book or something like that. They'll put it on a thumb drive for you. It's yours. You paid for it. So for this to happen, where you have to be there on official business, means they're fucking with it. And they're doing what this movie does. They write this song. And it's just about an old shoe that's reliable. And it helps you stand straight. You know what I mean? It's
sung so well. And listening to it, it's so dumb.
It's so fucked up. Yeah, it's so dumb. And you know, then they're like, "Can you make it a scratchy?" And then they go through the trouble of recording like a 78 and making a label for it and scuffing it up and putting it in the Library of Congress. And then one of the team members, like, is sleeping with a member of the administration or something like that. Or
yeah,
I don't know who it was. She was sleeping with.
Yeah, they're two like they're two aides or something. We haven't really seen them too much, only when they're like in the danger room downstairs. Right. I don't know what it's called. They're X-Men.
Skiff. Skiff.
I don't know. Something like that. Whatever.
That's the room where like De Niro's like, no, anything you hear in this room stays in this room, or you're fucked.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
But she's sleeping with somebody, and she's like, this whole thing with the Schumann reminds me of this old song, which is unlikely even in the 90s if you're 30 years old to be like, oh, I remember this old, you know, 1930s fucking blues recording on a 78.
Yeah, except now the like,
I can't remember how it goes. And then suddenly that has. Yeah, and now it's made its way into the charts, and everyone's talking about it, and the president like references it, and like,
yeah,
it's just it's how it goes,
diabolical.
Man.
It's evil. It's in the.
It's how it goes.
It made me tired. Actually, that's like the one that got me like the most upset, I think, is doing that. Like,
the music is perfectly bad.
Yes.
It's perfectly bad.
It's sung beautifully. Yep. It's bluesy. It's like, but it's just a bad
song.
It's
overproduced.
It's overproduced. Some of it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's really amazing. It almost sounds like it's just this side of praise music. It's just like, praise music with like a Bud Light.
Yeah. Except now they're this is like
totally. When you listen to this, I'm not sure.
But now it's like, this reminded me the most of like, because there's been a right panic of like, we need to hoard information from before AI, and there need or a thing that like AI is rewriting history basically because it's just giving bullshit answers to things. And that's really what this reminded me of, because they're like, we need to literally change history itself to make our lie work. And that's what reminds me of like the AI, why like our current president is trying to like, you know, remove restrictions for AI. It's why they fired, I can't remember her name. She was like, basically head of copyright, like doing copyright law in the US, but they're trying to get it back because the White House has no
They fucked up.
What's that? No, that wasn't Lena Khan. That was FCC. Sorry, but I take your point.
Yes. But it's basically that. And like, I love it because they had no way of knowing AI would be a thing. But like, this is just pure propaganda. It's propaganda in its purest form, is we need to bend reality itself. Well, we need to bend history itself.
And we need to permeate it on several levels. There needs to be a pop song. There needs to be a TV show. There needs to be like,
Well, and all they did this. They did this really clever thing where you expect Willie Nelson to be the one to sing the song.
Right.
But they get Pop Staples. Now, Pop Staples is born in 1914. He's the patriarch of the Staples singers. Huge in R&B and gospel. Mavis Staples. Most people have heard of Mavis Staples. This is her dad. Yeah. And he does the song. So the idea, I mean, and he does it. So of course it sounds from like the 1930s.
Yeah.
He would have been 25 at that point.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's absolutely perfect the way they handle it.
Oh yeah. It was a great bit of casting. Like mm-hmm. Everything meant something in this movie.
Yeah. Everything had a place.
You know, there wasn't like a squandered placement. Yeah, like everything. This was a very well constructed in terms of like that sort of thing. It could have been anybody, mm-hmm. and it could have been Willy.
Yeah,
and they could have done something else with it. You know, like they could have been weird with it, and they didn't.
What would these characters do? Who would these characters right. in 1997, at the time of this film's creation? What would they? Who would they get to sing this in real life? And they yeah. did. Like they were true to their characters in reality in the film, in the world of the film. Of like, well, no, because mm-hmm. it's supposed to take place in our world, in our reality. Who would they get to sing it? They would get that guy, and they did. They got him in the movie. Like. It treats a lot of the ideas with a lot of respect, and the fact that like
they it's managed, a very very no go ahead
no just the matter that they managed to get them like and it worked out like it,
yeah oh yeah no yeah. Yeah. there's like a huge like the medium is the massage vibes to this mm-hmm. I would say it made me kind of just think about like McLuhan and like this idea of you know like the phone being a cybernetic extension. You know, like it allows you to throw your voice around the world kind of idea. Yeah. And like same thing kind of here in that like they're hitting people in the newsstands, on the news, in commercials, like with they've used a Hollywood like resource to make a video clip of a girl running. You know what I mean? Like all of this stuff is being levied from the Hollywood side by Washington.
Yeah, it's like this is like the movie music shit, except you know.
Yeah, like, you know? Exactly. Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's like you know, if you're like one of the people who are like, "Well, the news lies to you, man," and it's like, "Well, you're a crank." Of course, the news doesn't lie. It's the American news. It's you know, and they're like, "Well, you know."
No, I'm having a hard time remembering like what happens before they meet Schumann. There was something going on. Oh, they like, oh god, no, fuck me. I should have taken better notes. I just watched this morning for the first time in like 20 some years. doesn't matter.
They're trying to figure out basically this is all going up to the war hero thing.
They're on their way to pick him up.
Wait.
They were just in transition. They were on their way to pick him up. Take him to what was it? What did they say? Boca Raton
for
the president.
Yeah. But they have like
I
think before that we also get an incredible scene of like they need to build up the propaganda more because they need to make it like this a mass movement. And this also resonated with me from shit that I've experienced growing up as well. Oh, yeah. Of the sense of like, so they're just these two dipshits are just driving around being buds because and they're taking old shoes like beat up sneakers and shitty ones and like tie them together and like throwing them into trees and shit. And this black kid. Yeah. It's like, what are you guys doing? These shoes look like shit. It's like, well, that's the point, son. Here, you want to try? And they start throwing shoes up in trees, and they're like, cool. And they're just doing that. And it builds and builds into this like populist move. There are t-shirts, there's buttons. People are totally buying this of like, we need to bring our boy home. You know, like a tennis team are throwing their shoes at like the camera and shit.
In the shirt, there's also the Morse code. Which becomes like the catchphrase that people start spraying graffiti for.
Yes, all over the place. He had like the image they doctored
he
is
tore holes in his t-shirt.
That's
and it reads "Courage, Mom."
Yep.
Oh my god!
It was so painful.
Never forget.
It was so painful.
You know what that was? You know what that was?
What
that was? Let's roll.
Yes. Oh my god.
That was Let's Roll.
It really was.
They called it.
It really
they called
was.
It so fucking hard.
Well, it's so many things. It's veteran worship. It's like I mean, we just had a veteran on our show, so no disrespect to him. But the point is like it's.
Well, no, it's in it's this movie. They're using him as a prop. And what's funny about it is how it turns out.
He's one of my favorite characters. And he's a monster. It's like, so yeah, they managed to get this brain worm into people of like, we need to bring our boy home. And it's raining like a motherfucker.
It's a horror movie for the next 10 minutes.
I thought he was going to kill them. And that's how the movie ended.
I did too.
They get him. Because, like, again, this guy's coming from, like, we find out he's coming from, like, Arkham Asylum.
Prison.
He's coming from the military prison. He's coming from the hole you kick you to, they kick you in. And they get him.
They ask him, how many years has he served? They say 12 years. How many has he got left? And he just goes,
They
they take the they have like a coat off and they take it off and they find out he's shackled because they give her the key.
Yeah, they hand him a key after without she signs for him.
Yeah, without explaining it at all. And she's like, what the fuck is this? And they're like, well, that's the manacles. Bye. Mm-hmm. And she's running after like, what do you mean?
They give her a big fucking bottle of medicine.
Yeah, like
it's these brown like capsulets. Like, oh my god.
Like Uber antipsychotics. And they're just
and
stuck.
It's Woody Harrelson.
It's Woody Harrelson.
With like some joke teeth in. And he's absolutely just chewing up the scenery and with the most minimal amount of effort.
Well, just so subtly, but just no one can look crazy like Woody Harrelson can.
Are we going to be back in time for the beans?
Yeah, for the beans. I mean, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Delivering these lines, and it's just like, I am so creeped out right now.
He is on the moon.
I'm afraid to laugh at him because I feel like he'll come out and kill me.
He doesn't know where he is. He's on more antipsychotics than anyone's ever been. He doesn't know what's happening. How could you explain?
The reason why he's in prison in medical prison is because he trigger warning. Fast forward 5 seconds, starting in 3, 2, 1. He raped a nun. Yeah. That's why he's in prison. They're just like, what's the worst possible version of like a crime? And they were like, that's the one. And then that's what he's saddled with. And he's like,
they didn't Lenny tell her
from Of Mice and Men, but bad.
But like a rip-roaring psychopath. Evil. Like,
absolute lunatic. Oh my God. I
love
this.
They didn't tell her this because, again, before they came up with this story,
incredible.
They kind of just left it alone. They kind of hinted at it really quick because they're talking about it like really fast. And so you as the audience don't fully I can't remember her character's name.
Anne Heche,
Oh god.
Winifred?
Winifred?
Yeah, Winifred doesn't like we as an audience also don't know the full details of what they're doing. Because they just look through special forces. And that's about as far as we got, that they were looking through units, and that's it. And that's all she knew as well. So there was
a similarity in words, because like it turns out they went to special prisons, and it was supposed to be like special programs.
Yes, that's what it was. They said special programs. They never mentioned that they're like looting a prison for like a guy who looks the part.
Yeah.
And so when they drop him off, she's like, what the actual fuck? Because it's the guy. It's the guy we've seen so far. It's the guy in all the propaganda stuff, and he's so checked out. He doesn't know where he is. He is a massive...
Let me put this way. The instant he opens his mouth, the first thought in your head will be, my God, you cannot put him in front of a camera.
Yeah.
Like the second he starts talking, the way he's playing this role, you're just like, oh, they fucked up.
I don't know if they dilated his eyes either, because like again, he's on like the most antipsychotics anyone's ever been on. Like he's
a good actor. Maybe he got a little high before the scene. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I feel there was a lot going on.
Woody's a revelation in this role. He's fucking incredible, and it's they keep asking him questions, and he's just off on his own little like, you know, I got to get back for the laundry, and it's. There's a menace to it because he's just standing there and they haven't lifted off yet. Mm-hmm.
No, and they pack him in so they're all sitting together, like shoulder to shoulder. They put him next to her for some fucking reason.
Like he's just in the background. They're sitting in the foreground talking about what they're going to do. Like it's very funny. Everything he's about this is very stage play. Like it's very cool.
Who wants
to? But eventually, they keep feeding him fucking pills so that he gets zonked out. And it doesn't quite work. He gets like a little crazier and they're like, what the fuck?
He has like a moment of lucidity because he's like, at the same time, the weather is a motherfucker. They're hitting turbulence. And he's like, who are you people? Where am I?
Yeah.
Like he's
what am I doing here? Yeah. The second pill kicks in and he just has a reset.
Yeah. It's like, what am I doing here?
So in the background, Neil, is running these ads. Like there's also this anticipation. They're waiting for this plane to land so that he can come out live on television.
I don't know how they expected that to work because he's shackled for good reason. He's in a prison jumpsuit.
Well, they didn't know. No one knew that this was going to be how it played out. And certainly not the people expecting him to arrive. You know what I mean? Like everything about this is, it's the perfect clusterfuck. It's brilliant. It's so beautifully perfect. Because you only need one thing to go right here and he just needs to be sane
or that's ish. Ish.
Yeah, he's not.
He's not.
I've worked with people like this. This is not, like, you don't give them the sharp knives.
No.
And Dustin Hoffman, I'm sorry. This is nothing. Let me tell you about the time that I had to, you know, just the whole time.
Did you ever work with Italians? Like, you know,
I was 4 months into pre-production before I even had the rights. Like, it's
incredible.
And just an allegory for each one of these things, like some sort of anecdote. He's a guy.
He's my favorite character. He's
folks. Just watch this movie. Like, stop listening to this podcast. Why are you still listening to this podcast? Yeah, you should be watching this fucking movie. This shit's funny as shit.
It's so good. And he's just like, you know, you ever work with Italians? They're all on benzos. You know, like, I'm like, I've watched Giallo films. I know. Like, you know. That was a great line.
Oh, but, God. Yeah. No. There's a storm. Everybody's expecting this. Neil's being a dick on the air, and then something happens.
Turbulence, lightning strike.
Is possibly the funniest thing that could have happened. The plane goes down. And the next time you see them, it's just like the three of them standing up outside like, well, okay.
I like it too because they never acknowledge like the other people on the plane. They're alive.
Oh, yeah.
The pilots are probably dead. Plane is on fire and it's fucked. Woody Harrelson.
They're standing right next to it.
Yeah. Woody's just on the ground because good. They're like, this is.
Oh, yeah. It takes a few minutes to realize he's still alive, which is like really funny because they're barely acknowledging it. And then they look down and he's just like, hey.
Beans.
And yeah, he's still going on about beans. And then they end up, oh my God. So there's this running bit about.
if this didn't resonate,
this is so timely. Oh my God, it is so timely. There was an issue earlier where they were talking about, like, it was this person an illegal immigrant. We can't have an illegal immigrant, on this
driving places or doing things, like, or
et cetera,
be associated with us because we're, like, an extension of the president, Anne Heche's, I guess.
Yeah, it's Anne Heche's bugbear. It's the thing that she keeps bringing up. And it's always, like, this little deal, like, we absolutely can't have this, which is, a perfectly Democrat thing.
Yes.
Like, and B... exactly how they felt at the time.
Yes.
You know, like that was a definite talking point at the time. It wasn't that like, oh, immigrants are great, but illegal. That's where we agree with you was their kind of big thing, which they never went away from.
You know, anyway, the people that are helping them, because every time like there is an illegal immigrant, like, and she's having like, she's like, we can't do this, is like, they're always assisting them.
In this instance, the plane is down. There's just the four of them. And they just start walking through a field. The next time you see them, they're sitting in the back of what you think is a truck and don't realize is a fucking straight up combine. it's just, they're taking the slow ride back to town in this guy's combine.
This poor man's heart.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful, like, kind of little capsule moment.
And that's what she raises concern about it. Like that, like, we can't be driven by like an illegal immigrant. And
in the moment. Oh,
and it's like, oh, you mean the guy who's like life or death situation helping you? You piece of shit.
They're just almost irredeemable. Like, it's so good. And, all right. So they get back to this. I loosely refer to it as a town. It's a convenience store with a house next to it. In the middle of nothing. Like just Kansas or whatever. You know, it's not Kansas. They're like somewhere on the East Coast. And they walk in. And you see that the guy that owns the store that's just sitting there, he's barely paying attention to his customers. He's watching television and there's this Neil talking shit about this president. And he's like nodding. Like it's really strange to see that and think, yeah, he'd be a Trump voter.
Yeah.
And no, yeah, you're probably right.
Because he's nodding along with it is like my opponent's like, you know, a lying piece of shit, basically, but he can't like come out and say that like they're staging this. I don't know how much. Again, we don't know how much the presidential opponent knows about the lengths they're going to to do this.
Well, they don't know about this because this is like there's no one around.
No, this just happened. Like they have to spin it. Like no one knows whether. Like they're like, I don't know, what did they say that like they landed and they're okay basically, but there's like delays or something. Like
yeah, we're on the ground, we're okay, but we're en route like via car or something.
Yeah, like.
But that's not happening yet.
No.
They're just trying to release a statement. You know, they don't know where they are. They're trying to get oriented. And it's at this time where old shoe, they're like shopping. And Old Shoe's looking out the window, and he sees the farmer's wife.
Yep.
And so he licks his lips and starts, like, basically stalking this woman back into her house. Yep. She screams. The husband gets up from behind the counter, grabs a shotgun.
Yep.
And best it's scene. Horrible, it's but it is so fucking funny.
It's horrifying
the only way this could have ended.
It's horrifying because you don't know what he's doing, because he's gone into like a room. They're trying to get in.
Yeah, you know what he's doing.
Unfortunately, I know. Yeah.
And but like, they don't show you. They have the what some people would call the good taste to not show you, and other people would say, "Why are you leaving that to my imagination?"
It's so much worse. Terrible. Because the producer guy is like, awful. The producer guy is like not is so nonchalant. Because again, everyone's a piece of shit.
Checked this out. Movie. Yeah,
so nonchalant about it. Like, he's like, "Come on, we can like get it." And then the shotgun goes off, and he's like, "Oh wait, hold on." He goes there. He's like, "Oh guys, don't worry, he's not dead." Bam. Oh, scratch that.
Yeah,
and I laughed my ass off.
I guffawed.
It's incredible.
I laughed so hard.
It's
the tension in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the going from the horror to punchline.
Yeah, it
really echoes that thing that I heard Jordan. Oh my God, Peele say where like about the similarities between comedy and horror.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. how there's a setup and a punchline. There's a setup and a punchline. And this is one of the
funniest jokes, I think, in the film.
One of the best examples of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of switching genres, of pulling like Danny Boyle's Sunshine, where you have like the sci-fi movie that goes horror in the last second. You know, like that's what this is. It's just like, oh, this is terrible. This guy's about to do the horrible thing. And then it's taken care of. And Dustin Hoffman's like, not a problem.
Yeah. They just witnessed a rape, then a self-defense kill.
At least an attempt.
Now, okay, I want to
be clear on this.
Yeah, 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 yeah. The amount of time that passes,
it's pretty quick.
It couldn't have been. Possibly. I mean, it could have been. Yeah, it couldn't possibly have gotten that far.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, as good as dead. It's good,
but it's telegraphed as what this guy would do.
Right.
So,
so the stakes are extremely high.
Yes.
Yep. And I mean, there are several stakes are at high. This man protecting the woman he loves. These idiots need their prop for their PR event. And all of those things come to, for one team, a very happy ending. Like, oh, okay, save the day. Made sure.
Oh my God.
The other team has been zeroed out. And of course they roll with it because now they're like, we lost him. Because of the crash, so bring them home. They had this whole thing where when they were going to get Woody Harrelson, like when he was still alive, and they were going to bring him out, and they were going to have like a kid shake his hand and rub meat on his hand so a dog would come up and lick his hand.
Yeah, like not thinking that, like,
I love that.
Yeah, that was really good. I actually was looking forward to like see how they would do that until you actually meet his character, where it's like, he would just eat that child.
But then they do it by rubbing, I guess, meat on the casket.
On the casket, yeah.
And
because it's all staged, and I didn't realize until they zoom out where they're just hanging out in like an office above it.
Yeah.
This isn't a real like military funeral. Also, why is that unit wearing leopard skin?
Well, it is in as much like it is the military in a military capacity doing a military thing. They have been given bad information, I would imagine.
Yes.
But they're doing it like they take it very seriously. I understand that. That's why it looks so tight. And it wouldn't be, you know, they're not wildly attended.
No.
Many of them. You know what I mean? Like when we buried my aunt in Arlington, they did the whole case on thing where you're behind the horses and the whole thing. And there wasn't a ton of people. You know, it was just like family and like these nurses that help everybody out and stuff like that. And this was a little different because it was like, oh, we've lost one of our own. And then they make the whole thing. But the 303 thing.
Yeah, what can you explain why they're wearing leopard skin and what the deal is with the music?
Because the 303 is like that was their division or something. Okay. It's made up. They made it up.
I didn't even pick up on that. That's why their uniforms look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're not.
I'm like, yeah, because I'm looking at it. I'm like, why are they wearing? Is
they're like jungle special forces or something? You know what I mean? Like, you just assume you're
it
left
looks
to
stupid,
assume.
And I'm like, is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Oh my God. No, it's not. They just made it up. They literally that makes it so much worse. I didn't even realize that they literally made up a military unit.
Just
Oh my god!
And the funniest thing about it is this funeral is the exhale that you did it. You know, you have this whole narrative about a war
and yeah, they're good buddies
coming home.
They got their arms around each other. They're like, we did it.
They have the armbands.
Yep. We fooled everybody.
The Fat King comes back and he's like, yeah, hey, look, I got this memorial. You know, I got the
shoe. He's doing memorial. Sketches for the memorial. It was like, oh, what about a clock? And it's like,
And then it has the memorial on top of the clock, like you would have the Iwo Jima flag thing. You know what I mean? And
so it's bad.
He's
so
like, the marketing is so amazing for this. And
so bad.
And this is the ending. And yeah. I almost don't want to get into it. I almost want y'all to fucking watch this thing because this ending slaps.
Incredible.
Yep.
But we're going to do the it anyway.
Brings it back to reality so hard.
Oh,
I love that.
They
so
got their
much
arms. Because, they got their arms over each other.
Yeah.
They got their buds.
Yeah. They think it's going to be cool riding off into the sunset. You did the thing.
They
did
it.
Did the impossible thing.
He did the greatest work of his life.
Yeah. And he wants some credit.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're watching a TV show. They're watching a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this panel. It's like a for you old fucks.
Like Donahue. A McLaughlin. Yeah. Like a McLaughlin group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I got distracted around here. What was the deal where he gets pissed off and they have an 800 number that he can call in?
He gets pissed off because they
Dustin Hoffman, by the way.
Yeah. Dustin Hoffman gets pissed off because they credit the shitty commercials as the reason the president won re-election.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And these commercials have been bugging him throughout the whole movie.
And they'll bug you too.
Yes, they will.
And he wants credit.
Yeah.
He wants the credit.
Because mm-hmm. he's a producer. He's like, right. I don't want to go as far. I mean, he's a movie producer. He knows art. Like, this is what he does. And
hold on. Yeah, there's a point in the movie where he wants the president to read a speech.
Yes.
And he's like, here's what I want. I want like 30 secretaries in the room. And he goes and he sits down at the fucking president's desk and he reads the speech. And then some time passes and, you know, De Niro and Hayes are standing outside and they open the doors and all the secretaries are coming out crying. And you're like, what the fuck just happened?
Well, and he did that because the president didn't want to read the speech. Oh, it's too corny. Yeah. But this guy knows show business. And he gets in there and shows him, no, what you're doing here is this, not just being corny. Of course it's corny because that's what pulls the heartstrings.
And what was crazy about it.
He knows his craft.
100%. And it reminded me very much like in later years of Bush Jr., how his demeanor and everything changed like on 9/11. And I don't mean in the like, well, of course there was a national tragedy, but I mean in the like suddenly he could read sort of way. Like before he was just like, well, get on, you know, little feller, whatever. And he was just some goofball. And then he was suddenly like, now we need to exterminate the evildoers, which we've been
doing ever since. Yeah.
Riding that fuse for 24 fucking years. Anyhow, Hoffman wants he wants a piece, man. And they're like, hey, we'll give you an ambassadorship.
Yeah, you'll have all the money, travel. You could fuck all you want. Like, it's, you know, because that's what ambassadors do, I guess.
And keep in mind, like through the whole movie, he's given out these great examples of things he's done and overcome, which are legit good stories. Like all of them are real quick, like little. He bitches about the fact that the Oscars don't have a producers category, which is funny. You know, like. He's amazing. Like him and De Niro and Hayes are at peak in this movie. They are so good. And it's so fucking nimble. It's such a nimble film, but you know, here's Hoffman at the end. You know, he wants that credit and he's walking, you know, he's going to call this 800 number and be like, no, because it's for like anonymous callers. He's like, no, you son of a bitch. And he was going to tell like live on the air, here's what happened. Which, what an Art Bell moment that could have been. And,
very different film.
Raving lunatic got on the phone and started screaming about how he mailed this guy. You know, like
that just becomes another film now.
Right. But so then he gets rebuffed. He goes, he's like walking to his car. And then like four agents go and they stuff.
Yeah, because De Niro is like, look, you're taking your life in your own hands. You can't, yeah. you can't do it. Like, you, so we, you signed the thing. You told us, you told us you were going to do it. Like, not yeah. tell anybody. He's like, fuck my life. I'm like, I'm an artist. I want to yeah. take credit. And then he storms right. off and De Niro gives the nod to.
Right. Now, yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Gives the nod to.
Oh, he gives the nod to, like, you know, Secret Service goon or yeah. whatever.
And I want to call this back to the throughout the whole movie, Hoffman keeps asking De Niro, so what do you do for the president? Mm-hmm. And Hoffman and De Niro just glosses over it, finds something, never answers the question.
Never. Yeah, I've heard he fixes things. I've heard he's a writer. I've mm-hmm. heard so many things. He's so so diabolical, so nebulous of, like, we don't really know what his official job title is. We don't know what he does. Mm-hmm.
There was this great movie, I want to say 80s, maybe the 70s, called Being There.
Yes.
It had, was it Peter Sellers, as Chauncey the Gardener?
Yeah, and Peter Sellers as a learning impaired gardener.
Mm-hmm.
That he's, they he's wind like, up. He's go like ahead. Advisor, you run with it.
Well, no, he's like the advisor to the president, right? And he is, Robert De Niro is the opposite of that. He's the opposite of Chauncey the Gardener, for fuck's sake. It's incredible. He's good. It's very, there's like kind of like, this is like when De Niro's not doing Ronin, he's doing this, like that character. You know what I mean? Like yeah. very big yeah. vibes of it. Like he's that clever, that sharp. And mm-hmm. That's what happens. Like
they hit him with a heart attack gun. And yep. I'm not even joking. They say the official version of his death is that he had a heart attack.
And it's yep. like a page six story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was a producer of X, Y, and Z. And, you know, his age was unclear. He was like either between right. like 52 or 60 something. And they're
that
like,
was hilarious. On the biography. Yeah. He's either 52 or 68 or something. It was great. It was fucking hilarious.
Oh, man.
And then the credits do this really fun thing, too, where they do a really quick medley of all the different songs.
Yeah.
And then I got a real kick out of it.
But the real ending is we go to a news story that an Albanian, like, freedom terrorist, whatever group has bombed a town or something. And now it's basically implying that, like, well, now you guys have started an actual war.
Right.
Because
right.
people yeah. are reacting to what you are doing. There or maybe they took the opportunity to. And then the yeah. movie ends.
It's so good. It's so fucking good. This is one of them ones that I didn't expect to resonate.
It's so dark. It is so
as much as it does.
It dark, holds up. It does. Yeah. It's so dark, and not even like yeah. in hindsight, to like what's going on now, it's especially dark.
Yeah.
This would have been dark then too.
Oh, it was.
It's grim. It's yeah, funny no. as fuck, but like it's black humor. It's yeah. brutal.
I but remember. Wanting to see it at the theater.
Oh, go ahead, Grim.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, it's just funny that nope, it's gone.
Oh,
I
have been there. I have been there.
Oh, it's just gone. Oh well, I'm sure it was revelatory.
Well, yeah. All right, here. As far as like say cyberpunk in general is concerned, I think this relates in terms of the manipulation of kind of. Your systems, your various types of information yep. systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this yeah, that's the obvious. Yeah, it's totally. Because, like, you know, this is the squishy version before you get, you know, whatever mm-hmm. mesh bots. You have to know how this works first before you can have the machines to do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's yeah. a really good kind of like jumping off point, the same way, like, I don't know. This is a good one to draw a lot of information or inspiration from because it's. Kick-ass performance is extremely fucking funny and cold.
It is, yeah. Cold's a good way to describe it. It's yeah.
it, cold it, as shit.
By today, yeah, it is. But like, because by today's standards, they would just get AI to do all this and then fail miserably because it's fucking AI, and we would all know that's bullshit. And they're trying to do that like right now.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. it's a good example of like, well, people who are actually good at their jobs. Mm-hmm. Like you could have put these people in like some sort of evil corporation, right? Like again, network, oh, yeah. right? Like
yeah.
it could have very easily been the same thing of like, well, how do we manipulate a reality enough to make sure this fucking child molester gets to be president again? is we'll start, we will actually start a war.
Yeah, that's oh man.
And
yeah,
the only character that is clear-eyed through the whole thing is De Niro's character. Even Hesh gets caught up in everything. But only De Niro has his finger on what is actually about to happen here.
Right.
And he doesn't give really a fuck.
No, and he doesn't. And, you know, he's doing a job. This is the job. And we're going to do it. Like, you have no idea who this guy is. Like,
No,
he's a mercenary.
Well, it's really funny because he's like the producer's producer. There's a really interesting moment where he kind of relinquishes control and lets fucking Hoffman just do stuff. He's like, that's why I hired you, dog. I'm not here to micromanage. He's a great agent of whatever the fuck he's doing.
I mean, he's definitely an agent of chaos. Like, I don't know. Like,
oh, the NSA and the CIA didn't know who the fuck he was, and he turned them.
Yeah. Like, he's terrifying. Like, it's
maybe this is a sequel to Angel Heart, and this is what he did.
I think it's a good example, too, of, like, if you just take De Niro's character and if, like, man, if you want, like, a Mr. X in anything you're doing, like, this is a good example of that, of this. Like, I don't know. Is he Satan? Maybe. Like, is he the judge from Blood Meridian? Yeah, probably.
Like, yeah. I mean, he's dude who gets shit done and without fail.
He's more of a
fault.
He's more of a force of nature than anything else, because it's like everyone else feels human except De Niro, weirdly enough, except when they're like, the only time he lapses is when they hit that roadblock of when right before they came up with the shoe song, basically.
Yeah.
They hit a snag and he's like, well, that's it. It's over. That's about it. I don't know what else to do. And then, you know, they rap about it and figure out, like, prisoner of war shit. Let's do that. And that wasn't him. Like, that was his only human moment, I think.
It's like, we had a war, now he needs a hero.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's what, well, that was Hoffman.
That was Hoffman. Yeah, that wasn't even,
Well, here's the thing. Oh, wait, sorry. Go ahead, Groot.
I was going to say was, you guys are kind of slowly ascribing these, like, supernatural things to De Niro. I thought he was perfectly human.
Oh, absolutely.
This is exactly, because, you know, I'm not saying that I've seen this sort of thing before. That would be ridiculous. Yeah. But in certain business situations, you run into people who are focused like this, and the people that can pull things behind the, oh, guess what? All the vice presidents in the room. And then there's this guy. Who the fuck is this guy? Mm-hmm. He's not on the org chart. I don't know who he is, but apparently he gets shit done. You know, he's like the cigarette smoking man.
Mm-hmm. In the X-Men. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's that. But in this movie, he's so affable. He could be Mr. Rogers. I mean, he's just so. But then he opens his mouth and says terrible things, as if he's just thrown off. I'm just spitballing here. I'm just, you know.
Well, yeah. There was this great bit at the beginning where, okay, they're having the jam session. Everybody's like throwing ideas in, and Hoffman gets to the point where he's like, okay, now for act two. And De Niro's like, no, we only need an act one for this. We only need 11 days. And this is before they realize everything was going to go to shit, because they figured this Albanian war, wars take a while to spool up, you know, hey, this will be enough time to cover. Well, when Harrison, or, you know, like, well, before they get Harrison Ford, before they decide to have, like, the vet, that's where he's like, okay, well, now we need an act two.
You mean Woody Harrelson?
Or Woody Harrelson, when they get
this Woody would have been a different movie.
Yeah. Oh my God, what did I say?
You said Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford, yeah. Woody from Toy Story. No,
right.
That would have been incredible.
but no, that's when, like, you know, De Niro has the capacity to adapt and relent, which is terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, most people are egomaniacs about, like, this thing, this control thing. But there was this great moment where he was just like, he lets go of the reins. He gives it over. He's like, yeah, you are going to get us through this fucking thing. You know, like, that's why I have you here. This is why you assemble a good team.
Yeah. And, like,
that made me think of another Barry Levinson movie, Sneakers.
Yeah.
I don't know that one.
God, I didn't realize that was I was just going through Barry Levinson's IMDb.
Yeah. Isn't Sneakers his?
I missed it if it was, but go sometime and read it, because the man has a perspective. Mm-hmm. Not just in what he directs, but what he produces. In the same year he produced this, he produced a Joe Dante directed, made for TV movie called The Second American, The Second Civil War.
Oh, shit.
And it's all about an immigration problem that gets under control and divides the nation.
Oh, wow. Weird. Yeah. Totally unrelatable.
Yeah, exactly. So the man has a perspective on things.
Yeah, he did Sleepers the year before this came out.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, man, his, what a fucking rip. He has like, the Diner was great. The Natural with, what's his name?
Redford. Redford. Yeah.
Tin Men, Good Morning Vietnam, which is a classic. And then he wins the Oscar for Rain Man. Bugsy, he won a bunch of awards for. He did that Toys with Robin Williams.
Yep.
He did Disclosure.
Which
we're not doing on this podcast.
No.
But it has the only reason is that, like, the only scene in that movie is like, okay, so it's one of these movies that's really trying to get into virtual reality. And it's.
Yeah. So
Michael Douglas puts them on, and it's just this gigantic room with endless, like, fucking file cabinets. And it's like, oh, man. No. It wouldn't be like, why would you do that? That's like worse than the real thing. What are you doing? Anyway.
Maybe we should.
I haven't seen anything before. Well, no, like the thing that's kind of shitty about that movie is that it's like the inverted Me Too. Like, I think, who is it? Michael Douglas works for Demi Moore, and she's this like powerful executive and stuff. And she like sexually assaults him. And he's like, oh, gosh, what do I do? I saw that one in a theater too. And that's when I was like starting to kind of be like, I should go to more raves. this ain't doing it. But Levinson's, man, he's knocked quite a few out of the park. I feel like this is kind of one of his undersung, you know, masterpieces for sure.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Good pick, Group. Damn.
Oh, thank you.
Fucking needed this.
Well, you know, we wanted to talk less about politics, and here we are.
Yeah.
I think we brought that up too.
Well, okay, the story there was, a friend of mine who had not listened to the program listened to the last episode and was like, I made it about 10 minutes. It was a little too political. I was expecting a little more cyberpunk. And I was like, well, cyberpunk is political. So, you know, but let's set that aside. Yeah. That one was kind of intense. It was pretty intense. Okay. Yeah. So maybe we want to, you know, provide a little bit of an escape. So what do we do? A political movie. Thriller.
But it's a comedy.
It's a comedy.
It's British shit, but it's a comedy.
It's like Death to Smoochie levels of black comedy. You know, like it's
It's like, I can't say this isn't a brutal film, because like when you start it up, you have no idea. Until not even 5 minutes in, they're like, he molested a kid, and I'm like, oh my god, and that's
This film wastes no time. It's an extremely efficient script.
It's a really fun. Good.
Yeah. This would be one to teach, you know, like I definitely think that in terms of pacing and in terms of like
dialogue,
everything
pacing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Barry Levinson's like 82 years old. I'd love to have him on the podcast.
Come on the podcast.
Someone get a hold of Barry Levinson and see if he would talk to us about what was like going on at the time. And like, you know,
is he okay?
Yeah, I think he's got to be okay. He's a good guy.
Okay.
Anywho, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what we're doing after this, so.
Fuck, wait. Yeah, like, what do you...
I keep saying I want to do Nightbreed, but I think that's just because I, too, would like to just talk about something that makes me happy.
We've had some really neat conversations about really niche topics that are internet culture or some mixture therein. Shadow had some good ideas. Dan had some great ideas. I've got a couple of things up my sleeve. So some more broadly topical, but still cyberpunk related. I think they're all cyberpunk adjacent, which is, you know, does it cyberpunk? It turns out a lot of things do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of the concerns cross over because, you know, it's always like I like the class issue. Like that's a thing that I'm more interested in than say like,
yeah,
I don't want to. It's so hot. I don't want to put more clothes on, man. Like, I don't know. They look cool as fuck, but it's like, I'm not. It's if it gets to be the way like the future is, if we're going to be more naked.
And, yeah, we're all just going to be going around in thongs.
Yeah.
So, you know, join us next time when we watch The Beastmaster and talk about how that is cyberpunk.
Cool.
Beastmaster. What was the Barbarian Brothers?
Yeah, Barbarian Brothers. Yeah.
I even know what that is.
dude. Okay, so yeah, we'll have to do like a trilogy of like old barbarian
master, movies. Hawk the Slayer, and Deathstalker 2.
We just we just become a sword and sorcery fucking podcast.
There we go.
Yeah, we'll do that. Cyberpunk's
dead, right?
Yeah, I'll do it. Cyberpunk's dead. You know,
we need to distract ourselves from the horror. Yeah, we need to.
We'll get into like the barbarian age right after I do that Catholic priest's novel, God's Game.
Well, and the telephone episode.
The telephone episode that's become like, you know, a 10-hour epic. Yeah,
like our Duke Nukem Forever.
Absolutely.
This is my Shenmue 3.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Dude, guys, just be more patient. Just be a little more patient with me on this one, because we're in the phase where the telephone episode has become an NFT, and I have to wait until I get 3 slurp juices.
Oh, I thought you were just waiting for it to ripen.
No, it's a long, slow story. It just takes the trends.
Well, this is a hell of a way. This is a hell of a way to tell you that. You could buy a lowlife coin. We're following the president's example.
Oh
God, stop us. We should stop now. Stop now.
Hey, it's the Low Life Podcast. Do you know anything about that? You jammed the console cowboys and service space.
Baiting!